The Crantho Podcast, episode 74, 5 key steps for setting up shop online. And the first step is deciding where you're going to sell. And I know this really, it kind of stops a lot of people in their tracks, and they get really caught up with this issue of trying to decide where they're going to set up their shop. You know, there's so many website ways of building a website these days. There's so many different online venues that it can be really overwhelming trying to decide which way you want to go.
I'm Jess Van Den, and this is the Create and Thrive podcast. A former school teacher, I turned my handmade hobby into a thriving business, and I also teach other creatives how to do the same. My goal is to help you learn how to turn your creative hobby into a thriving, profitable business. So let's get learning.
Good morning, Thrivers. Jess here. Welcome to another episode of the Create and Thrive podcast. It's so lovely to be here with you today. I've just gotten back from a week in Townsville visiting my dear friend Penny, which was just lovely. But it's nice to be home, as always, isn't it? There's nothing quite like your own bed and your own house, no matter how much you enjoy a trip away. So we hang around and did some ingressing, which is a game. I don't, if you've never heard of it, it's if you've heard of Pokemon Go, which you probably have, Ingress is like the granddaddy of Pokemon Go. It was developed by the same company years ago, and Pokemon Go was actually the map was built off the back of the Ingress map. But it's there's two factions, and they're warring for control over the world. And you have to go out into the world, and there's portals, you know, at in public spaces on memorials and art pieces and stuff like that, and you try to capture portals for your team. Anyway, she and I are both players, and we had a lot of fun doing that. Yes, I am a total geek. Although I'm not much of a gamer, it's like the only game I usually play regularly. I think it's because you have to be out in the world, and actually, you know, you can't just sit behind a computer or whatever. So it's kind of fun that way. So we did that and just hung out, and I saw my old high school and places like that from when I lived in Townsville for a couple of years. It's always funny going back to somewhere that you spent a lot of your formative time, and especially if you haven't been there for a while, seeing all the changes. And Townsville's a developing city, you know, there's always lots of new roads and things on the outskirts. So yeah, it was interesting, but it's nice to be home. And jumping back into work today, I've got a big few weeks ahead because, of course, Set Up Shop is running again in a couple of weeks' time. The course is going to start on October the 3rd, which is a Monday for us, which, you know, if you're in Canada or the US and whatnot, it'll be kind of the Sunday evening that we'll kick off for you. But yeah, so I'm really looking forward to running that. I haven't run it since, I think, February, so it's been a while. And I know a lot of you have been asking me about it, waiting for it to run again. So here's your chance. This will be the last time it runs this year, and hopefully, you know, it'll run again in the first half of next year, but I'm not sure exactly when. So do jump on board now if you want to be part of the Setup Shop course. It is an intensive course, 30 days, 30 you know, lessons, and I take you through everything you need to know to set up or revamp your online shop. It doesn't matter where you're selling. It could be any venue. It could be your own website. That's irrelevant. It's all of the core topics and the core steps you need to take and the things you need to be aware of in order to set up, you know, a well-running and a good-looking and functional online shop. So if you're listening to this as it's published, the doors will be open next week, and make sure to head over to the Create and Thrive website to register to join the course. I hope you are going to join us. It'll be awesome. There are three levels of membership, so you can pick the level that works for you. And I deliberately keep the silver, the first level of membership, affordable so that anybody, hopefully, who really needs this course can do it. So with that in mind, I thought today it would be fun to talk about online shops and just kind of, you know, get you in the right mindset and share a few little tips for you, you know, a few things that are key steps to setting up an online shop. So, you know, even if you don't do the course, these will be really useful key steps for you. And if you do, this is just a bit of a taster of the sort of stuff we're going to be covering. So I'll just start with number one. And the first step is deciding where you're going to sell. And I know this really, it kind of stops a lot of people in their tracks, and they get really caught up with this issue of trying to decide where they're going to set up their shop. You know, there's so many website ways of building a website these days. There's so many different online venues that it can be really overwhelming trying to decide which way you want to go. And to be honest, there's not really a one-size-fits-all answer here. It really comes down to you and your level of comfort and experience with techie stuff, like with, you know, the web and online stuff. I'll give you my top recommendations. Now, I'm a big fan, and I am very passionate about the idea that you need to have your own website, because you need that real estate on the web that you control. Nobody else controls it. Whether you sell on that website or not is up to you. I think you should, but you don't have to do that straight away. I do, however, think from the beginning you should attempt to at least set up a basic website. And at the absolute minimum, you should buy your own domain name, your own .com or .whatever, and have that so it redirects to your online venue. Say if you're selling on an online venue rather than your own website, at least buy the domain name and get it to redirect so that, you know, on your business cards or in your social media or whatnot, you can actually just use your domain name, your URL, rather than a, you know, an at Made It or at Etsy or at DeWanda or whatever one. And that just looks that little bit more professional. So there's a couple of steps. Stage one is, you know, you want to choose to sell, to start out on a venue. And, you know, honestly, my top recommendation here is to start on Etsy, simply because they are still the world's premier handmade marketplace and they do bring in an enormous amount of traffic for you. So being part of that that kind of community, that lot of traffic that Etsy brings in is really a really powerful way to kind of get your foot in the door. Because, you know, setting up your own website, it's a lot more work to get found and to get seen in the first place. So, and it's easier, you know, to be fair, because you don't have to worry about all of the actual website setup stuff in the back end. You just, you know, you go through and you upload photos and you fill in boxes and tick things, and that's all you have to do. You don't have to know any code. You don't have to, you know, do anything. You don't have to make any decisions about how you want the website to look. It's going to look the way it looks. You just have to focus on the content. And I think that's really important, especially if you're starting out, because there's just so much to learn and so many things to think about that honestly, it can be easier just to start somewhere like Etsy, because you don't have to make all of those decisions at once. You just start by focusing on the content of your shop rather than the design. And being creative people, let's be honest, we like to fuss with the design. We like to make things look pretty. I'm totally there with you. But it can be to the detriment, because you spend all of your time making things look pretty and you don't spend enough time focusing on what really matters, which is what you're actually selling, like the photos and the descriptions and all of that sort of stuff. So if I was to lay out an ideal plan for you, it would be start on a venue like Etsy, buy your own domain name and redirect it to your Etsy shop as your first step. Then once you've spent, I don't know, a little bit of time working out, you know, working on your content of your shop, take that next step and set up your own website then. And you'll just basically be able to copy and paste all of your content across, and you can just focus on the design element of your website. And it doesn't hurt from the beginning. You know, if you want to just set up a simple website with, you know, a landing page, an about page and a blog, that is a great idea. If you want to blog, do that from the beginning, because then you can build up traffic that way via bringing people in through your blog to your website. So make sure when you do choose a website, however you're going to set up your website, if you want to have a blog, which I do recommend, you need to make sure you can host that blog on your website, not somewhere else. Because the whole point of having a blog is to drive traffic to your site and then hopefully get people intrigued enough about you to look at your shop. So don't go for anywhere that you can't put a blog on the actual website. I made that mistake in the beginning, which is why I'm saying, do ye not this. You know, I had my Ethereal Designs blog and then I had an Etsy shop. And that was fine. But then I thought, well, about, I think it was like 6 months or a year later, I'm like, okay, well, I actually want to set up a shop on my own website now, but I don't want it to be Ethereal Designs because my brand name is just Ethereal. So I bought ethereal.com and set up on there. But then my blog was on a different, different website to my shop. So silly. Eventually, of course, I just merged them and kind of closed down ethereal.com. I left it there. It still gets lots of traffic because there's such a backlog of content on there. But I've like put, you know, stuff up saying now over at this URL. But it's a mess. It's a messy thing to do, and I wouldn't recommend it. So if you can, start right from the beginning. I should say start correctly from the beginning and choose a platform that allows you to set up a blog on your website and sell. So all of those things in the one place rather than having them spread all over the shop, so to speak. So, of course, my top recommendation there is WordPress.org to buy your own domain name, buy hosting, and then set up a WordPress using WordPress as your CMS, your content management system. There's heaps of places out there that do that allow you to just install it with one click. It's really easy. And the dashboard these days, you know, it's all, again, it's what you see is what you get. Editing, you just edit it and you see it as it is. You don't have to know code or anything like that. So it's come a long way and it's really easy now to do that. So that's my top recommendation. It's also a relatively affordable way of doing it. And then if you do set up on using WordPress. Now, this is not WordPress.com. There's a distinction. WordPress.com is basically, you know, they host it for you. You can set up a blog on there, whatnot. But with WordPress.org, you actually get the software and you can host it on your own website. So that's what I'm recommending here. And then you can install, you know, you can run a blog on that, obviously. And you can also sell directly from it. And there's heaps of different ways to do that. But the two I recommend are Ecwid or WooCommerce. Those are two really good options of shopping carts to plug in to your WordPress website. So then you've got, you know, and this is what I have to this day. I've got my Etsy shop. I do sell on a couple of other select venues, only a small proportion of our products we have on a couple of other select venues online. And then we have our own website with WordPress, and currently we're using the Ecwid shopping cart software. So that's a good manageable option, but it will be a learning curve. I'm not going to lie to you. You know, if you don't have any experience with all of that sort of stuff, it will be a learning curve. And that's why I'm suggesting if you aren't confident with, you know, techie stuff, start with a venue like Etsy and just focus on the content. So that's step number one. Decide, you know, where you're going to sell and choose a path or choose a goal for yourself of what you want to do down the line. You don't have to do everything at once. This is my point. You don't have to set up your venue and your a perfect website and everything like that. If you've got the time, great. And you've got the skills, great. But don't let it hold you back. If you don't, you can just start selling on a venue or even selling on a Facebook using like a shopping cart plugin. Like seriously, just start wherever you can and build from there. So the second tip, the second key step, I should say, is work on your photography. Yes, you've heard me say it before, but it really is that important. If you go back through the podcast archives, there are a couple of episodes specifically on photography with more detail on this step. You know, the things to avoid, the things to work on with your photography. So do go and listen to those episodes. We also have the Create and Thrive Guide to Product Photography if you want more information and more in-depth help on improving your product photography. That is there as well, and you can just see that over on the website under guides, and that's available there. So photos, and it's getting It's never going to get less important. It's always going to get more important because there's more people out there competing. And so you really need to stand out or at least be on par with the professional sellers. And that's the key here. Like if you're going from that hobbyist to taking it a bit more seriously and turning it into a proper business, whatever that means, it really is just a decision you make. There's no moment where, oh, I'm suddenly a business. Well, I mean, you have to get your business number or license or whatever it is in your country. But it's really a decision and a mental step that you take that you are a business. So like it's just one moment you can be a hobby, the next moment you can decide you're a business and that's it. So once you decide that you are a business, you really need to start thinking about your photography and improving it as much as you possibly can. You know, if this isn't your strong suit, that's okay. I was absolutely terrible at photography when I started. Honestly, it took me years to get to the point where I was really happy with my photos, but it didn't take that long to get to a point where they were okay. You know, so just learn, you know, that's all you can do. Or if you can get someone to help you and, you know, whatever it takes to get good quality, crisp, clear product photos is very important. Now let's talk briefly about the whole white background issue. Some people are like, oh, you have to have a white background to show off the product. And other people are, white backgrounds are boring and they don't make your stuff stand out. I'm in the second camp. White backgrounds are very important if you're selling wholesale or if you want press photos, you know, that they can kind of snip out the item. But for online selling, honestly, I think having some sort of interesting background that doesn't detract but actually enhances your product is really powerful because it's all about branding and it's all about standing out. And honestly, you know, white background photos, there's no opportunity for branding there. That's just the same as everybody else. But the key here is clear product photos. Like you can't overstyle your photos so that the product itself gets lost. You know, remember the product is the star of the shot. If there's any doubt whatsoever when you look at a photo, what's being sold, that's a problem. So make sure the product is the star of the shot. Make sure it's well lit, but no, with no harsh shadows. Make sure it is clear and crisp. Make sure they're, you know, the person looking can see the product clearly. Make sure they can get a feel for the size of it and the heft of it and the true colors. All of those things are really important. And that's what you need to be working on with your photos. Make sure there's a close-up. Make sure there's a modeled shot or a styled shot. All of those sorts of things. But as I said, I'm not going to go into any more detail on that because there's plenty of resources over on the site and in the podcast, etc. So if you want more, go check that out. Okay, so number three is brainstorming your keywords. So a lot of people who start out and don't understand how searching works will often kind of skip this step or they won't think about it and they'll call their products, they'll give them fancy names, you know, pretty names. That's nice, but it's not going to get your stuff found. So you don't want to call it, you know, the Adelaide necklace. Who's going to be searching for that? Nobody. You give it a title that's descriptive and also a description that's descriptive. So the title of the product, the keywords you choose, and the first few lines of the description are the most important place to have the keywords. So what is a keyword? It is a word or a phrase. It doesn't have to be one word. It can be a phrase, like sterling silver. That's two words, but it's one keyword. It's a phrase, keyword phrase, that people are going to put into a search bar to find what you are selling. All right. So with every single product you make, you need to brainstorm a list of keywords that will help people find that product. And then you need to use those keywords so that people can find the product. So have a look at each product. And there's a big list of possible things you can look at. I'll just give you a couple of examples. What material is it made of? What color is it? What size is it? You know, who is it for? What? All of those sorts of things. Like just basically come up with all of the adjectives, the descriptors that you can for that product and you know, what emotion is even is it going to invoke? Like, there's heaps of things. Is it for a specific event or holiday? So make a big list of all of those keywords and then pick the most important ones, the ones that people are most likely to be looking for. Always put yourself in your mind of your customer and think, if I was looking for this item, this is the question to just ask yourself. If I was looking for this item, what words would I type into the Google search bar? And then those are the words you really need to use as your keywords. There is, of course, many more layers to this, and you can get much more technical and much more detailed. But that is if you do that and you do that and answer that question well, you've got the battle pretty much won. So that is the most important thing to ask. And don't get too fancy. Like, you know, just ask that question, answer it as logically as possible, and go with that. So, keywords, because that is how people will find you. Photographs are what will make people click on your site because they'll see them and go, wow, that's awesome, I want to know more. But the keywords are what people are going to actually put in there to find your stuff. Now, a little aside on this is when you're uploading a photo to the internet, please make sure you've named it with keywords, okay? Because that photo is there, it's searchable. So make sure that you've actually, you know, in your title or your description of the photo, make sure that you have used keywords to describe what the photo is. So even rename it, like my rings, you know, for example, I would name my photo, you know, 5mm oxidized sterling silver ring, wedding rings for men or something like that. Like, I'd get as many keywords in there as possible, because then when people search Google image search, if you haven't written anything, if you haven't put keywords and it's just like a string of numbers from your camera, you're wasting an opportunity to be found. So make sure you do that. Top tip there. All right. So that is number three. Number four is to think about shipping. You have to make this decision. And it's not a decision you have to make once and then decide forever, but it's a decision you need to think about right at the beginning before you start selling stuff. One, are you going to ship domestically and internationally, or you're only going to ship domestically? And this will, of course, depend on your product and the cost of shipping overseas and all of those sorts of things. So this is a totally personal decision. I can't help you make that decision. You need to actually talk to your post office or get on their website or whatever it is. Look for the shipping costings. Look, you know, actually weigh your stuff or get the dimensions of it. And then make a decision, and it might even be on a product by product basis, depending on what you make, as to whether you're going to, you know, sell this domestically or internationally, how much you're going to charge for shipping. Do not undercharge for shipping. If somebody wants something bad enough, they will pay the shipping for it. The only other way to do this is to put some of the shipping price into the item price. So increase your item price to decrease your shipping cost. But however you do it, you need to cover the shipping cost. So, you know, don't skimp on that, and don't guess, because if you guess, especially with heavier things or bigger things, you could end up being in a world of trouble, because you could end up having drastically undercharged. And when the person buys that thing and they pay that shipping, that's what they're paying. You can't ask them to pay more. If you've made a mistake, you wear the cost. Don't ever ask a customer to pay more shipping because you didn't do the work in the first place to work out how much it should have cost. That, you know, that's your fault as a business owner. You made that error. You have to wear it. It never ceases to amaze me when I hear stories of people being contacted when they've bought something and the person contacts them, go, oh, actually the shipping's this much, can you pay the difference? And I'm like, no, I can't. You should have worked that out. Like, that was your job. You quoted me a price. I paid the price. If it's the wrong price, that's not my fault. Why should I pay for that issue? You know, so just do the work. Like, it's boring, I know. It's not fun. It's not exciting. But to be honest, if you're running a business, you need to just get comfortable with the fact that a lot of stuff is not going to be exciting or fun. You know, if you want it to just be fun and enjoyable, just keep it as a hobby. Honestly, please keep it as a hobby, because that's the point of a hobby, is to be fun and enjoyable. When it's a business, there's going to be stuff that, you know, you don't necessarily want to do, but you have to do. And that's just the way it is. And that's okay. But, you know, just go into it with your eyes open on that.
So investigate, decide on the shipping thing, make sure you're quoting the right amount for shipping. And just, you know, so many people will say, oh, I haven't bothered setting up international shipping because it's so expensive. Who's going to pay that? You would be surprised. I cannot tell you how often we have people pay $50, $60 to get a ring to them because they need it quickly. So they pay an express international shipping cost. The ring's only $100, but they're paying $50 or $60 to get it to them more quickly, extra. And it happens regularly. Now, if I didn't offer that as an option, I wouldn't have those customers because they'd go elsewhere to someone who offered it to them. Who said it was possible. So don't make a customer's decision for them. Make it possible for them, and then they can choose one way or another whether they want to incur that cost or not. Okay, so that was number four. The fifth one, very, very important, is your policies. You need to have policies in place to protect you and to be very clear and upfront with your customers. Now, I don't expect you to get this right at the beginning. I certainly didn't. There were things that I just didn't think about until they happened. And then I'm like, oh, I should really have a policy in place for that. So I put it in place. And that'll happen, you know, naturally with the development and evolution of your business. But you can kind of cheat here. And what I recommend is you look at shops that sell something similar to you. Look at their policies, like at least five of them, especially, and make sure they're established. Like they've been around for a while. They know what they're doing. And read their policies and see anything that comes up that's specific to your niche, but just anything in general. And make sure that you put those things in your own policies to protect yourself and to educate your customers about what's acceptable and, you know, what the go is with your business. So make sure you're covering things like returns and exchanges and, if they change their mind, you know, will you accept it back? Like, can you accept returns or can you not accept returns? Like, it depends what you make. And I can't accept returns on rings because we custom make them to a size, so we can't necessarily resell them. But if you're making something more generic that you know you can resell, then that's fine. You can accept a return if somebody just gets it and goes, oh no, I don't actually like it, or whatever the problem is. So think about all those things. You know, make sure to put in place policies about, you know, that you're not responsible for customs fees, all those little things. And you wouldn't even necessarily know about that unless you'd looked at other people's policies. So go do the research, look at other people's policies. Don't copy them, like don't copy and paste them, but you can basically take the same stuff and just rewrite it in your own words. So make sure that you do that. And that's really, really important. Not only does it protect you and educate your customer, it also shows your customer that you're serious about this and you take your business seriously. So I think that's a really good thing and a good reason to get policies sorted out from the beginning and not leave it till later on. So there you have it, everybody. That is five key steps for setting up a shop online. Just to review, number one was to decide website or venue and how and where. Number two was to improve your photos, your product photos. Number three was to really get clear on your keywords. Number four was to investigate your shipping. And number five was to research your policies. And if you do at least those five things, you'll be well on your way to, you know, having a smartly designed and set up online shop. And if you want more help, come and join us for Set Up Shop. Starts in just a couple of weeks. The doors will be open next week, so the final week of September 2016, and then classes will start on October 3rd. And we have a Facebook group, a private Facebook group for students that has all of the alumni in there. There's many, many, many hundreds of people who've gone through this program and used it to help them set up or revamp their online shop. And if you want to hear from some of them, head on over to the website, createandthrive.com, and look for the banner that links through to the Setup Shop page. And there's lots of feedback there from prior students and stuff like that. And of course, if you have any questions that, you know, that page doesn't answer, just shoot me an email. I'm happy to help and to give you any further information that you want to know about the course.
So I'm going to head off now and get on with the rest of my day. It was lovely to be here with you as always. I hope you enjoyed this episode and I hope that I'll see you in the course. And if not, I'll be back next week with another episode of the Create and Thrive podcast. Have an awesome week and bye for now.